Accession number 10602, reel 18.
Mr. Elliot, reel 18. You were just beginning to talk about the accident of the Welsh regiment.
Yeah. Well, in 36, I was about 6 months into my nursing training, and I was on night duty, the only orderly on surgical ward, because of the very few patients there was in the ward. And when I went on duty one night, the ward was half full, and some were on what would they call them? Anyhow, it was the Welsh regiment's rugby team that come to play rugby and were attached to the Durhams in Calaba Barracks, Bombay, and for training they had got an Indian Army Service Corps vehicle to take them to what was known as Beach Candy, where they could go swimming and exercise away from the eyes of the rest of the army, so they could train. They were a good rugby team, make no mistake. But on the way from the barracks on this particular day, the driver must have been going at a fair old speed, because he went to a roundabout and the vehicle overturned, which caused a number of fractures and abrasions and damage to the Welsh rugby team. And I went on duty that night, and I was on my own, and it was rather a bit airy, to put it right, because I'd never had any of this experience before, since I was still under training. But anyhow, I got through it, and I was on my own, and at 7 o'clock, I think it was, the next morning, there was the day orderlies came on and they helped. And this went on for 2 or 3 days when I was sent for by the matron. I thought, oh, yeah, I am again in trouble. So I went down after duties. I went down and saw the matron. And she said, you won't sit your exam for passing as an orderly. You're already passed. She says, you've shown enough initiative and consideration and hard work with the patients you've just had in overnight for the past few nights that I consider you've qualified as a nurse and orderly. And from that moment I was qualified. I was the first one of that course to qualify.
What kind of things were you taught as a nursing orderly?
Keep the patient comfortable. Look after the patients no matter what. The patients came first. You gave them medicine under the direction of a nurse and sister. That's providing it wasn't a highly prescribed medicine. But there were certain medicines we could give straight away on time. Everything was recorded. If you just gave a teaspoonful of anything, it was recorded in the ward book, and was always checked and signed by the orderly, the senior orderly, before he finished his duty. Those who wanted feeding, you fed. Those who wanted bathing or cleaning, you looked after them that way. Just more or less like you have in an ordinary civilian hospital even today. But the patient always came first.
Were you trained to give injections?
No. I think the time I was training was a long way before injections and what have you. On the occasions I've been in hospital since I became a civilian from the army, and I've been in, I've had injections, I've had more things done to me than I ever realised could ever happen. And when I tell the nurses of the instruments which had to be sterilised, And when I told them how we sterilised them, they just started to laugh. And they said that must have been the ancient times. So you can so far back. We had a stainless steel drum, which was on a Bunsen burner. And we had to put all the instruments in there, boil them, and then take them out with forceps and lay them in trays of Lysol. They'd never hear of Lysol today, but that was the disinfectant used after they'd been cleansed in the but anyhow, that was the way we did it.
Was it general first aid training you were getting?
Yes, you got first aid training, and you got as if you were required to go into a battlefield or where for carrying on stretchers and what have you. You had all that training, but nursing always came first. I don't think I could have qualified now, not as a nurse, not what they've got to go through, but it was bad enough then.
Did you wear some kind of armlet or something to show that
no,
you were nursing
white,
only?
All white. White shoes, white trousers, white shirt. Your uniform was white while you were on duty. When you were off duty, it was like if you were back in your unit. You could wear khaki or you could wear a mixed dress, a full white dress or a full khaki dress. But when you were on the wards, you were always in white, so that there could be no mistake that you were an orderly. And the orderly was always the head of the ward. But there would be a sergeant who would be ward master, and he would be the orderly sergeant of the day. But for the general nursing and the administration of the ward, so the hospital, would be the sisters. The QA sisters. Most of them you could get on with, but there was always the odd one, like there is everywhere else, which I've already said. But I think I got on well with them enough.
Were the doctors army medical people?
Medical, yes. The lowest rank was captain, but we also had a surgeon who did most of the surgery, was Major Muhammad Halley, and he was in either the Indian Army Medical Corps, they had two, IMS, Indian Medical Services, or the Indian Medical Corps, but he was a member of those, but he was also a major in the Indian Army, and he was a surgeon, and he used to do most of the surgery at the hospital. But there, bearing in mind, we had an Indian wing, which was, like ours, was run by the Indian soldiers. Indian Medical Corps, or the IMS, Indian Medical Services, they would run their wing, which was part, separated from the British military wing, but the Indian wing would be separated, naturally because of the food and religious and what have you. And they never tried to mix them up.
Was there any differences in the quality of the treatment between the two?
No, not that I know of. Everybody got the same treatment, even the married families. When they came in, the sisters would look after the married families, the youngsters or the women. But all the men were in the military hospital, but there was a family's wing. And everybody was treated the same. Got the same treatment, same sisters, same MOs. Oh aye, they were well looked after. Funny thing, not long after I'd gone on the training, we were being given an interview, a lecture by a major. And he came amongst us talking, and he said, is there anybody here from Shotton Colliery? I said, no, but I said, I started work at Shotton Colliery. And he came from Shotton. He was the son of some doctor, I think. forget his name now, Mirjalinen. Mirjalinen was his name. And he was from Shotton Colliery, and I'd started work at Shotton Colliery in 27. And I said I belonged to Wheatley Ale, and we never mixed, you know, ranks, other ranks never mixed with the officer ranks. But it was nice, we had a bit crack about Shotton and Wheatley Ale in the area, so that was canny.
When you qualified, did this get you any extra pay?
No, nothing.
It was just an extra qualification?
Just an extra qualification. And an extra £30 if you wanted to buy yourself out.
Was it a long day that you worked?
Yes. 7 in the morning till about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. 2 shifts. And you did that. I forget how long you did night duty, but I think it was for a month. When you started, you took over for 8 o'clock, so the others leave at 8 o'clock. But mind, if you didn't have very many patients, all the nursing staff would not be on duty. The minimum would be on duty to cope with the patients in the hospital, whether it was officer's ward, surgical ward, medical ward, or even the mental section. You had the minimum number. And if you had a ward where there was nobody on, that person who would be on the ward just for emergency reasons would help in the other two wards if necessary, if it was needed. You backed each other up all the way. You got a number of days when you most probably didn't have anybody in the hospital. I mean, we're talking about fit men, supposedly fit men. In most of the operations or the bed patients were hernia or...
I was going to ask you, what kind of ailments were you dealing with? Because this is peacetime India.
Peacetime India. Appendicitis. And you most probably have some with skin diseases. Or you would have malaria or the other fevers. But they were all kept separated. They all got good treatment. They were well looked after.
What was the discipline like within the hospital administration?
The hospital was much looser. The discipline let's put it two ways. The discipline itself, if you were in the wrong, you got the same punishment as if you were back in your own regiment as infantry. But that you couldn't always stand to attention if you were attending to a patient when an officer or a war assister came on. You see, you always had to stand to attention in the infantry when an officer came across. Now, and even if an NCO in the infantry, when you were there, if he called you, you came to attention to answer. But you couldn't do that. There was no way you could run a military hospital under those kind of conditions. They were more relaxed that way, but if you broke the rules, the punishment was maybe worse. I don't remember anybody being severely punished, but not while I was there, the year I was with the military hospital. But I've heard of medical corps lads who had been punished because of one thing or another, where they hadn't carried out the duties properly. Yes, I think the discipline in the medical corps was just as high as the infantry, but it was freer on when you were working, if you can understand what I mean. I mean, if I was, say I was given a bed bath to a patient, and I knew the voice of either a ward sister or an MO or an NCO was coming in, or a WO, I mean, I wouldn't just stop. I would say yes sir or yes sister, but I wouldn't stop working because the patient came first. The patient always came first. The care and comfort, that's what was driven into you from the moment you were transferred or attached to the medical corps. That was knocked into you word day in, day out. The care and comfort of the patient comes first. You come last. And that was carried out right to the letter.
With the exception of the odd ones who were difficult to get on with that you've already mentioned. Overall, were the staff-patient relationships relaxed?
Very good, yes, very good. Very good.
Irrespective of rank?
Irrespective of rank. Because they had to be. I mean, you see consultants in the civilian hospitals. I mean, I know the days when I was first started working in the mines, that sisters in civilian hospitals almost used to shiver when they said there was a consultant coming around or a surgeon. But I never saw that fear in the military side. The discipline was there, but not the same. Oh, it was more relaxed in a sense. As I say, it's there.
The food, was it better or no worse than what you'd had in barracks?
I wouldn't like to compare the two. I always thought we were better fed in the barracks for the simple reason we always paid a penny a day more for extra food where we didn't with the medical corps. But that doesn't say the food was any worse. Only we got a little more. We were known as a well-fed regiment. I know a lot of people who became attached to us over the years. We had a specialist attached section, and they had to pay the same as us, and they got the same kind of meals as we had. And when they used to leave, they used to say, "We'll never be as well-fed as we were here." But that was voluntary. The men of the regiment volunteer to pay a penny a day, where the other regiments didn't have that.
Was it Indian food you were getting from time to time? I'm thinking of curries and things like this.
Oh yes, and that was when I had to do without. Oh yes. When I first went to India, all you heard about was curry, and it was served like a soup, a starter. You know, you would get gravy or curry. So, having heard these men, the old soldiers and the ones, about the curry being great, I got my first plate. I had one sip and somebody else got it. I couldn't take it. And then, maybe once a week or once a fortnight or so, there would be a main meal of the day, would be curry and rice with meat or whatever. And it was done the Indian style, not the soft style you get in this country. But it was done proper Indian. So that was the time when I had to buy my own dinner. I had to buy something to eat because I couldn't eat it. I couldn't get the... I'd never eaten rice, and I'd always found milk puddings hard to get down at any time. And curry, I couldn't get the curry. Well, it burnt. It was red hot. The lads loved it, but I was one of the awkward ones.
What was the water supply like, was it? Clean, or did you have to do something with it?
No, we had fairly.
No restrictions.
We rarely drunk. Though the water was there, we rarely drunk water. What we used to do was, I say, we had the charwalas, and we had free tea just after Rivali. Then we had tea with breakfast. And we had tea at tea time, and I just forget now whether we had tea at supper time or cocoa, but there was always you had three lots of odd drinks, and then one of the storemen would be selling mineral waters, and there would be chunks of ice in a bath tin, and you would just pick one up and say it, and you would pay for it or at the weekend, you know, come out your pay. As many penny bottles, anna bottles of one anna. You would buy one of those bottles. They used to have the old glass alley to pop down.
Right. You moved to Dulali.
Bombay.
From Bombay to Dulali.
Moved from Barrackpore to Bombay and Dulali.
I see. What you've mentioned what Bombay was like. What was Dulali like as a camp?
Top of a hill. It was up in the Western Ghats, fairly high.
Was the accommodation as good as the other places?
Oh, I had plenty of accommodation. There were bungalows, all bungalows. A long stretch of them. Yeah, there was plenty of room, verandas, airy. You had to put blankets on when you were there. It got chilly at night. Sometimes you wore your service dress. But you were way out in the wilds. There was only one place, barring the Doolally. The Hindustani word for Doolally is Devlally. Where we say Doolally, they say D-E-V-L-A-I. We say D-E-O-L-A-L-I. But they're both the same place. But there was an holy city called Nasik. It was a few miles away, and we were never permitted to go anywhere near it. You see, the difference, a civilian could have gone into Nasik, but we couldn't. Therefore, we lost out in not knowing the people, not being able to mix with the people. Now, that could be for two reasons. Maybe because of the Indian mutiny, they didn't want to cause any more civil strife, or they just didn't want us to know how the Indians lived. I don't know. I couldn't answer that. But we were not allowed to go to Nasik City because it was a holy city.
Were the Indians a friendly people towards you? What little dealings you did have?
The dealings I had with all the Hindus, I never found one unfriendly. They were a poor race. They were always, the vast majority of them would always be after bakshi. That was, they were cadging or trying to get something out of you, money, if they could. But poor souls. When you saw them, you could understand why. When you did see them, you know, the rich were rich and the poor were very, very poor. Don't make any mistake about that.
Did you see any of the cruelties that go along with the caste system?
Well, the caste system was there. I mean, and it's still there. It hasn't changed one iota. I mean, a road sweeper is a road sweeper. A water carrier is a water carrier. And it just goes from there, from up.
There wasn't any distinctive harshness from the rich or higher caste to the lower.
They wouldn't let them go any higher. You see, in a world like ours, if you're fortunate enough or brilliant enough to make a fortune in this country and you go higher up the ladder, you could never do that in India. And that was what was Gandhi was trying to do. He was trying to equalize in India, but they still haven't done it. And to emphasize that, not very long ago in this country, the high class Hindus were trying to stop the Hindus who had gone to schools and colleges and universities, this one, because they were a different caste, they couldn't do the same job in this country. They were trying to stop it. So it was worldwide.
At Doolally, was there an Indian village near the place, or a township of any kind?
There was just Doolally Bazaar. The Doolally Bazaar.
Just the bazaar there.
But we could only go in there, but we had to be out by retreat. 6 o'clock was retreat. You had to be clear of the bazaar by 6 o'clock.
Doolally was a hill station.
Yeah.
Did you go there at a certain time of the year when the climate was wrong at the other...
You changed over. You did 6 months in Bombay, then 6 months in Doolally.
What were you doing in Doolally that was different from Bombay or Barrackpore?
Same. You did the military duties. Depending on the time of the year. On the odd occasion, when the battalion was together, and you would do battalion training with an Indian regiment, or a couple of Indian regiments, you would do training.
What form of what they might take?
Well, just manoeuvres. A battalion in attack, or two battalions in attack, and a battalion in defence. Could be an Indian regiment in defence, and the Indian and the British battalion. But generally, we fired our annual weapons training course at Doolally. So did the Hindus, the Indian regiments. And there was like a depot for the Indian Army Service Corps and Indian Army Ordnance Corps, and there was a military hospital there as well for the Indian regiments as well as for ours, which was there. But we only had two companies and the administration from battalion, and we had three companies at Bombay. Now you would do your normal training, which I've mentioned before. You would start with your weapon training, then your section training, then your section and platoon training, platoon and company training, battalion and detachment training. Now if the battalion ever got together, then the whole battalion was company and battalion training. But when you were at Bombay, one of the three companies would go away under canvas, away from Bombay into the scrub land, and you would do training there. You would do training in the field training.
What form did section training take?
Well, your section leader would take you out to train you in case there should be active service conditions. I say active service because I cannot say war, but you may be called out. So your sections would be trained for so many paces apart. Those who were trained with a special rifle which had a cup on for grenades, 36 grenades, Mills bombs if you like, and then you would have riflemen, and then you would maybe have a Lewis gunner. Now then, you would be trained to cover each other and to cover an area of ground. Now the others, you would have three sections generally who would go forward in extended order. You'd have platoon headquarters behind, then you'd have the fourth section would be spread out behind those to take up position behind any of the other sections. If a section came under and received casualties, the reserve section would be ordered forward to take up the position there. Now, in a real occasion where this would maybe be needed with a battalion or a company, you'd have three platoons forward, which meant you would have nine sections forward for a company, and you'd have three sections in reserve, which was there for anyone who needed aid. They could call on any of those, the nearest of the three rear sections, and they would cover each other. Now, you were also taught, as the civil disturbance was in Bombay in 36, you would have soldiers facing one side and soldiers the other facing the other side. They would both be facing inwards on a road or a street. The soldiers would be facing inwards, but they would all be ready to cover the other side, any disturbance, and the ones on the opposite side would be able to see the disturbance coming the other side. And there would be so many feet or so many yards apart, depending on the civilian element.
Was there a civilian problem when you actually experienced this?
No, I didn't. I was nursing. I was in the hospital then when this happened. But the battalion did, yes, in Bombay.
Did they carry live ammunition?
Oh, yes. Oh,
do you recall whether it was actually fired and...
I don't recall any being fired, but what did happen, although I didn't observe it myself, it was openly stated that the men were facing, and one Hindu run from one side of the road to the other, and the soldier had his rifle and bayonet at ease on the ground, and the Hindu run and put his neck straight onto the bayonet.
You kind of martyred him.
Martyred him, yeah. That's the way they were.